glad to have everybody with us for today's Political Rewind. Boy, we have a lot to talk about, so we're going to introduce a panel and get to it as quickly as possible. Greg Bluestein, the political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is here. You have a couple of stories in the paper over the last 24 hours that we're going to want to talk about today, but thanks for being here.
Of course. Glad to be here.
If you're watching on Facebook Live, which you can do by going to the GPB news page on Facebook, right across from Greg in our temporary studio. I remind people we're building a brand new talk studio, but this temporary studio is working out pretty well.
Nice.
Yeah, you can actually see faces because the microphones are lower. That's Lori Geary. She is with us today. Lori, of course, longtime political reporter for WSB TV, and now the host of Georgia Gang on Fox 5 at 8:30 on Sunday mornings. How long have you been in that job now? It's been a while.
Well, I joined the panel probably almost a year ago, and really it's just been about 2 months taking over as host.
Took over from Dick Williams, who'd been there for about 137 or 138 years,
yes.
I think. And he is enjoying, I assume, being a little bit more laid back, retiring.
Yes.
I'm glad you could be here. We love having you on. Mike Thurmond is with us. He, of course, is the CEO of DeKalb County and has held many spots in elective office as a legislator. He was the state labor commissioner, superintendent of DeKalb County schools at a time when they really needed some strong leadership, and now CEO of DeKalb County. Thanks for coming in, Mike.
Delighted to be with you, Bill, as always.
And across from you, Ed Lindsay, former Republican legislator from Atlanta, back with us again today. Ed, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start with you. Let's do this. It's graduation time, and many people at this table have graduates to brag about. Yours is who, Ed?
Shout out to Zachariah Weston Lindsay, class of 2019 from the University of Georgia Law School.
I hope you can hear that we're playing Your Graduation Means Goodbye in the background.
That's good.
Where's he had, you know?
He's headed up to Washington to work on Capitol Hill.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
Has he got it working with a member of the House or Senate?
He's still looking. He's got several interviews lined up. He's headed up there next week, and we're very excited for him.
Oh, terrific. Lori Geary, you've got a graduate, too.
I'll try not to cry. My fifth grader, Alexandra Talbert, my daughter, my oldest, she's graduating from fifth grade today.
Wow.
So it was a big day in the Talbert family.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bluestein, you have a graduate too.
Yeah, Brooke Bluestein graduated from pre-K. She got a class ring, a ring pop, that she quickly ate, and she's going all the way down the hall to kindergarten.
And we should give a shout-out to our senior producer, Tom Faust. His daughter, fifth grader, she graduated this morning as well. Catherine is his daughter's name. So it's graduation.
I have one.
Go ahead.
Not a son or a daughter, but my niece graduated from Emory Law this past Sunday.
What's her name?
Renika Archibald.
Wow.
Very proud of her. She's working now at Greenberg Tart.
Wow.
Oh, not bad. Good firm to get involved with. All right. My daughter graduated from Emerson College in Boston, which is why I've been wearing a Boston Red Sox cap all day a week ago. So, and she's now in New York City working with the great director Kenny Leon on the public theater Shakespeare in the Park production this summer, which is Much Ado About Nothing. So we all have something in common today. All right, let's get right to it. Greg Bluestein, let's talk for a number of shows now. I know people say, all right, we've heard enough about 481. We know the abortion law. You know, we know about it. We're starting to get tired of hearing about it. But the reality is it keeps generating news here in Georgia and across the country. And the story that you reported exclusively is about Governor Kemp, who you should have been with him in Los Angeles today. That was the plan, to do the annual Georgia Salutes the Industry event. he couldn't go.
I was going to leave right after my daughter's graduation, head off to L.A. Last week, he postponed that trip probably until November of later this year because of a swirl of rumors about protests and no-shows. And so they decided it would be better off not to have that event now and wait till maybe the edge is taken off a little bit. Who knows if that will happen. But in the meantime, he visited the Georgia Film Academy today to try to show his support for the film industry and try to quell the growing unrest in Hollywood over his anti-abortion heartbeat bill that he signed into law and that Republicans passed this year. And amid all this, there's also word of even more projects that are leaving Georgia. There's already a list of Hollywood celebrities who have said they will not work in Georgia if this law takes effect. And now we have two more developments just yesterday of two more productions that are pulling out of Georgia.
All right, so let me throw this out to the panel. We have said on this show, and I've gotten pushback from a number of panelists, and so I want to ask all of you that to dismiss the protests, as Governor Kemp did at the convention last weekend in Savannah, as the protests of C-list celebrities, is quite simply a mistake at this point, because Lori, this is a growing concern. This thing has a life of its own, and I think that the governor and the supporters of this law are not quite sure how to handle it.
Well, I think I agree with you, Bill. I think the C-list celebrities comment really fired up that crowd in Hollywood. And then you had Ron Howard come out shortly after that, big time director, big name in Hollywood. And I think, you know, once the bill signing happened, we knew that there were protests, but Hollywood was kind of silent. And then it seemed like it was like a growing crescendo almost. And I don't think it's going to end anytime soon. And if you are getting tired of hearing about this, because we struggle with it on the Georgia gang, it's not going away. And maybe it's not going away until, you know, this makes its way possibly all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Ed?
Well, it will have some business impact. I still have my doubts as to how serious that impact is going to be. The bottom line for the film industry is the bottom line. And I believe most folks that are working here in Georgia will continue to work doing film, being part of the film industry, which is now a $9 billion a year industry in our state. Certainly there are some jittery feelings out there about this, but I think in the long run, I'm still doubtful that it's going to have a long-term impact.
So, Michael, your take on this is particularly interesting in this room because DeKalb County, of course, has been courting film and television productions. You'd like to get your share of business and have done a good amount of business. As CEO of the county, how concerned are you about what seems to be a growing feeling among industry folks that Georgia is not a good place to work right now?
We are very concerned about the implications of this. We are becoming the center of film production in the state of Georgia. There's a big project being proposed by Black Hall in southeast DeKalb. But this is going to be and will continue to be a major concern for us from just an economic development perspective. In terms of the political impact, I think the Republicans are concerned, because this is beginning to emanate beyond the film industry. My DA, the highly respected Ms. Sherry Boston, has gone on record with other DAs in Metro Atlanta saying that we will not prosecute a woman under this statute.
Yeah, and she's one of four Metro area DAs, and we're going to talk a little bit more
about... I don't want to get in front of
it. No, that's fine. Yeah. That's important that you mention it now. We'll talk in more depth about that. So here's the thing. We have some 92,000 people, I think, employed in the film and television production business here. Time Magazine posted a piece on their website which quoted several of them as one of them was a woman who was going to be part of a TV production, mm-hmm. Greg, that was shooting down in Savannah. She'd bought a house down there because she expected this series was going to have a five-year lifespan. The contract was 5 years as starting point. And the production has pulled up roots. And there are others quoted in this who are Georgians who say they're troubled by this. They think the work is starting to dry up.
Yeah, and it's good to remember, too, that as much as that a lot of that film production is based in Metro Atlanta, it also has such an impact in places like Savannah and rural areas, small towns all over Georgia, where film production crews want certain settings, and Georgia kind of offers everything from the mountains to the beach to rural settings to urban settings, and that's why Georgia Boot was so popular. There's a movement called the Stay and Fight movement that's just trying to push back on this, mostly from Democrats who are saying, hey, all these boycotts isn't the right way to do it, because the people who work in these industries tend to be left-leaning supporters, voters. And so when all these Hollywood producers and directors and actors talk about leaving Georgia, they're hurting the 90,000 or so employees who tend to support their views.
Well, that gets back to my point. Like I said, I do expect there's a lot of publicity around it right now. But once things settle down, once folks start seeing the people that are impacted, once folks start looking at the roots that have been already laid down in Georgia in terms of the production facilities that and start listening to the folks who are asking folks, you know, if you oppose the bill, don't leave, stay. Be part of the Georgia community. That, I think, is going to have a lot more impact in the long run.
Mike?
I too, at Black Hawk, one of the things that that had an impact on me is how transient this business is. You can almost shoot a movie anywhere. The real threat is a state that might pass similar credit abatement legislation. And the investment is not that great to build a movie studio.
Well, we know that North Carolina had a thriving movie business.
Yes.
Dino De Laurentiis built a studio up there, much the same way that we now have studios here. And when the North Carolina legislature started backing out of the tax credits up there, that industry dried up virtually overnight. Yeah.
And came here. And I think what was interesting is a couple people, when I was out and about over the weekend, it was interesting the comments I had from folks who don't follow politics as closely as we do. They were asking me, do you think Governor Kemp is going to give? And I was like, give on what?
Give on what, yeah.
And I think it's because we're so used to this Governor Nathan Deal administration, who I think in a lot of ways bucked his party, you know, and put business first in terms of religious freedom, because he didn't want this state to turn into an Indiana or North Carolina. So I think that we're used to that type of governing. And now we have Governor Kemp, who's on a whole nother side.
So, but get back to your point. It was in North Carolina, not some...
No, it wasn't social issues.
On a social issue.
You're right.
It was bottom
economics.
Line issue of taking away the tax exemption.
So, Ed, let me start with you on this, and then I'd love to get everybody else in the mix here. So Brian Kemp at the state convention last weekend may have, I mean, he was throwing out red meat to his base. That makes perfect sense. And he may have rather inartfully talked about C-list celebrities. We're not going to let them push us around. But what about the larger point? Another way of saying this is we are not going to let business interests interfere with a firm belief, moral belief that we have that a fetus is a life and should not be aborted. So it's great. We've all spent time talking about the business side of this. But if you're on the other side of this issue, one of the things you're saying is, excuse me, we're talking about saving lives, which is the way they feel.
Which is very much the way they feel. And that's why this governor is held so highly by the base, is that, you know, he said he was going to support this legislation. He supported this legislation, and he signed this legislation. We can, and we have here, debated as the merits of the legislation. But in terms of him keeping his commitment to his base and to the and doing what he said he would do in the election, he's done exactly what he said he was going to do.
What was interesting about that speech over the weekend in Savannah was that he had taken the stance before whenever we'd ask him about the Hollywood impact from the anti-abortion bill. He would say, well, look, Hollywood values are Hollywood values, but I fight for Georgia values. Fine, right? That was his answer. But what he did over the weekend was take a much more confrontational tone, much more confrontational than Governor Deal ever had or Governor Perdue ever had, certainly. Those were two of the biggest supporters of the film tax credit. And it was, you know, from studio executives who instantly start lighting up my phone, they were saying he's asking for it. I mean, he's asking for this to accelerate. And then that's exactly what we saw over these last few days. Who knows how big this will mushroom, but certainly we've already seen this impact starting
to
cascade.
Greg, what should we make of this visit that he's done, tried to do very quietly, but that you reported, were able to report on?
I mean, I think one of the takeaways is that he's keeping it private, right? So it's not meant as a larger show to say, hey, he doesn't want necessarily cameras and reporters following him as he does this, because they're trying to still keep a lot of this under wraps.
I just got a text from someone in the industry here in Georgia. Again, that we've all been talking to similar people, and some of them don't mind being quoted by name. Others don't want to be. All I'll say is that this is somebody who is deeply involved in film work here, and unless I'm told it's okay to use a name, I won't. Kemp canceled a roundtable with me and my colleagues and did a closed-door Film Academy tour instead to avoid criticism. Are you aware of that?
Yes, and you might be the same source. but yeah, at first, there was apparently plans for some sort of roundtable in front of reporters and cameras, where film studio executives would be able to confront him and ask him and question him personally. And instead, Georgia Film Academy, there is a studio on set there, but it's not the same as talking with some of these studio executives who are losing. In one case, we reported, Rodney Ho, my colleague, reported that one studio executive here lost a $30 million production and was told flat out it was because of this.
So, Mike, some of the Hollywood folks are parsing this very carefully. We're hearing from people like, I think, Ron Howard, that if the courts uphold the Georgia law, they're getting out of Georgia. So that's hedging your bet in a way, and it speaks to what Ed is proposing will happen, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I guess you have to disaggregate the moral conviction, which we have to acknowledge that there is a conviction, a belief that children exist with heartbeat. The politics of it is very different. Now, writ large, with Governor Kemp is, I think, modeling President Trump. We discussed on numerous occasions whether the Republicans would try to expand from their base or would they double down to their base. And that question has been answered. So far, it's been successful. We are discussing Governor Kemp. Let's just not forget that fact. Yeah. Not former candidate Kemp. Yeah. And so until or unless it proves to be not successful, I don't see him migrating from that position.
Lori, I think what Mike just said is really interesting. Trump, of course, has from the very beginning done everything for his base. And now Brian Kemp, who only won by some 50,000 votes, has apparently decided, at least at this early point in his tenure, that he too wants to play to his base, and that it's his base that will keep him in office for a second term.
I think we'll know next year, in 2020.
Yeah, in the legislative races, of course.
I think we'll know for sure the impact. I mean, I will say, this is the one issue, the abortion debate. It really brings out both sides, right? It brings out the Republicans just as much as the Democrats. Nobody sits home when it comes to this issue, I feel like. So, but I think in 2020, we'll know. And in 2022, will it be former Governor Kemp, or will he have enough in the rural Georgia to really sustain him?
And I believe, excuse me, Greg, the 2018 may have fundamentally changed Georgia politics from a moderate, even Democrat or Republican, whether it's Governor Deal or Governor Barnes, they were basically moderates, if you really think about it. And now 2018 created, now Stacey Abrams also played to the base. So Governor Kemp is playing to the base. So that is now the path that I think we'll pursue in Georgia politics for the foreseeable future. I think it's unfortunate because I am a lifelong moderate.
Yeah.
Not sure I have a place anymore.
I think that's true what Mike just said about himself, Greg. He's increasingly kind of an outlier. He's a guy who's been able to form consensus across party lines. where does he stand now, you know?
Yeah, through like four different positions.
Yeah.
And that's really, that strategy was laid bare at the Republican convention this weekend, where it was, I've been to every convention since whatever, 2012. And in 17, at the last convention, there was very little talk about Donald Trump. It was mostly state and local issues. And this convention was almost all about Donald Trump. Every speaker invoked him. His face was everywhere. His memaboo was everywhere. He was tied at the hip to every candidate. And I think the strategy for both parties is, if you can turn out your base, the moderates who would lean towards you are going to go your way anyway. It's all about base turnout and doing things like you're seeing Governor Kemp do.
But in the long run, as Michael has discovered in his executive positions that he's held, you have to govern from the middle. You have to take into account the views on both sides of the spectrum and just try to come up with good, solid policy. And that's going to be the question as we go into 2020 and beyond, is who can actually govern. I mean, we have very real issues in this state. We have issues on education, transportation, economic development, on down the line. And in the long run, while we do have these gyrations on the extreme, you're going to have folks who can govern from the middle.
And I also think when he was talking about the middle, you know, when we look at polling in any race, we're now looking not just Republican, Democrat, but we're looking at those independents. Because, you know, since Governor Perdue first got elected, we know that those independents have really gone Republican. But now we're seeing those independents kind of in the middle, and perhaps maybe they'll head more left, but we'll know, you know, next year.
Let's keep talking about this, but add a couple layers to it. Michael Thurmond, you talked about your DA in DeKalb County, Sherry Boston. She became one. You're the Fulton, Paul Howard, DeKalb, Sherry Boston, in Cobb, the acting district attorney, and the fourth. And I don't remember off the top of my head who it was. Danny Porter,
Danny,
of course.
And then
Cook and who, Macon. By the way, I don't exactly think of as a liberal district attorney, but they've all said, Michael, they will not prosecute women. There are questions as to whether this law, in fact, opens the door for women who have abortions beyond 6 weeks to be prosecuted. And they've all said it isn't going to, we will not do it.
Yes, and so you have basically a national issue that's been argued, debated at the state level, and now been localized. And so now you can think forward to the next election cycle, and will they have opponents that run simply on that issue?
Yeah.
I can see it happening in counties and jurisdictions all over the state of Georgia.
Yeah.
This legislation has many legs.
Yeah.
Let's sort of break down the legal issue, because, you know, we've discussed the economic issue. There's certainly the political issue, particularly in the suburban areas where there's a lot of battlegrounds races going on. And then there's the legal issue. And for your listeners and viewers, I think it's important to understand something. Nothing by this bill changed the existing law in terms of who can be prosecuted for abortion. For committing abortion. That's a criminal statute that's been around for over 50 years. It's 1612.140 in the Georgia Code. And the only one who can be prosecuted for an illegal abortion underneath that code section is the individual who's performing the abortion, whether it be a doctor or a midwife or whoever. That law wasn't changed by this. That law applied when the cutoff date for an abortion was 26 weeks. It applied when it's 20 weeks, and now it applies at 6 to 8 weeks. You know, yes, there are some folks who are worried about unintended consequences, but if there are unintended consequences, they already existed in the existing law.
I do want to give a plug real quickly, because it's the appropriate time to do it. If you want to hear a more detailed and in-depth conversation about the various permutations of what some people believe this law could do, Robert Jimison did a terrific podcast that's posted on the Political Rewind website right now with Amy Steigerwald from Georgia State University, a frequent panelist on the show, and Donna Lowry. And Amy Steigerwald really broke this down.
Yeah.
And it's well worth listening to.
But if I can add one other thing, you know, folks on both sides of this issue, folks who both believe in this and who don't believe in this, when it comes to actually drilling down, are generally in agreement on that. Stacey Fox, who's with Planned Parenthood, also came out very strongly in the Washington Post and said that nothing in this changes the existing law when it comes to who could be prosecuted.
But there is certainly confusion. Yeah. I reached out to all 49 district attorneys in Georgia to ask them what their stance is on this law, and I'm still getting some of the responses back. Mm-hmm. And I've heard from about a quarter of them, and several, as you mentioned, not just the Metro Atlanta DAs, but also the Macon DA, David Cook, said flat out, would not use this, would not try to enforce this statute at all. And then there's many, many other DAs, including many in rural areas and more conservative areas, who said, hey, I'm not going to make a prejudgment. It's a case-by-case scenario, and I'll see. Several of them said there's no abortion providers, you know, Planned Parenthood facilities in their territories, but certainly there's OBGYNs and pharmacists. So there's a lot of muddy area, and several of these DAs are saying, yes, this law already needs to be clarified.
Well, I think also now that we're kind of past maybe the political ramifications of this, or maybe we're still discussing them, but then there becomes these uncomfortable conversations about implementation if this becomes law. And women are very confused, and maybe, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there, but it's like, how do you enforce this law? And what about the HIPAA Act? And, you know, what are you going to do in doctor's offices? I mean, because I was trying to look up and researching for the show, like when the last time an abortion provider was prosecuted in Georgia under the current law, and I couldn't really find any. So maybe something like an article that needs to be written. But, you know, what is the current, you know, how is the current law enacted now?
Meanwhile, you made a good point, too. You alluded to it. We're hearing from clinics that women are already confused, are already not sure it's legal for them to go and have an abortion that they feel they need to have for whatever reason, because they don't quite understand that the law hasn't gone into effect. And so it's sowing some confusion already, Mike Thurman.
And out of confusion, the human mind often will meander toward worst case scenario.
And fear.
It's fear.
And it's creating fear across the state, and particularly in the suburbs with educated, primarily white women. I just do not see this being a win with that demographic.
So I've got to get to a break, and I'll do that in just a second. But, you know, I do want to say one quick thing. You know, we pride ourselves on this show on bringing people of disparate opinions together to have reasonable conversations about major issues. I've tried to figure out a way how you can possibly have someone who supports this law talk with, say, a Stacey Fox at Planned Parenthood and have a reasonable conversation and a meeting of the minds. The simple reality is this is a black and white issue, and there is no meeting of the minds on this, it seems to me. Am I missing something?
I think a lot of issues are like that now, though. I mean, you talk about immigration and things like that.
Yeah, but even those you can get.
I think
get,
because this one is so personal.
I disagree. But I do recognize that the loudest voices are those voices out on the extreme. But I do believe that when you do get into a detailed discussion with someone who isn't firmly, ensconced.
I don't buy it. You're either allowed to get an abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy or you're not. Well, that's all there is to it.
No. I'm talking about the broader abortion issue.
Okay, I understand.
Not necessarily. You're absolutely right on that issue, on that bill. You're either with it or you're against it. But when it comes to the broader issue of all the various things involved in abortion, I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with the extremes on both ends of the spectrum.
I got to get to a break. We have a lot more to talk about on Political Rewind today, and we'll do that in just a moment.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
I'm gonna get in my car. Drive so far.
With unemployment near a 50-year low, workers who once had trouble finding jobs are now in demand, including those with disabilities.
99% of all the people I run into would much rather work than collect a disability check. And that's just the truth.
Moving from the disability rolls to the payroll. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Greg Bluestein, you father of a preschool graduate.
And a second grader.
We had an important ruling from Judge Totenberg, Amy Totenberg, last night. It's the continuation of a case that began in the months before the 2018 election. She was presented with a case in which the plaintiffs demanded that Georgia vote on paper ballots in November of 2018, initially, because of their concerns about security lapses in the machines we were using. She, at that point, said, look, I'm sympathetic, but the election's coming up too quickly. We can't make changes now. But in the last 48 hours, she has said, yes, this case in which these plaintiffs say they want paper ballots for the 2019 municipal elections, and more importantly, into 2020, when we allegedly will have new machines, she says the paper ballot argument can move forward.
Yeah, this was a big victory for the plaintiffs, who, you know, the state often can win these sort of dismissal motions, but Judge Totenberg, she wrote that the plaintiffs in the lawsuit paint an unsettling picture of the vulnerability of Georgia's voting system. And, you know, she had kind of hinted that she was leaning that way in the earlier arguments that our colleague, our AJC colleague, Mark Nisi, was at. So she kind of tipped her hand a little bit here, but still it was seen as a major victory for the voting
rights groups. So let me again, Michael Thurman, because you are the CEO of one of the largest counties in the state, what do you do with all of this information? If you were not certain, if Totenberg takes this case and ultimately rules that we should be voting on paper, then the state's effort to buy these new machines becomes in question. And you, as a county leader, got to figure out how the heck you maneuver through all this.
Absolutely. And I've had to immerse myself much more than I ever dreamed I would have in the local election system. Actually, elections in DeKalb County
handled separately.
Handled separately, right. By a board of elections.
Right.
You know, not including the governing authority. However, what Judge Totenberg, there are issues of merit here that needs to be discussed. And I think that was important. The plaintiffs were able to defeat summary judgment, i.e. to move the case forward, to hear the concerns. And it's hard not to acknowledge that we have had issues with voting and with tabulating those votes. And every Georgia citizen who's interested in democracy and fairness should want these issues to be aired. And I'm hoping out of that, we will have a system that is more accountable, more transparent, that all citizens will have more confidence in. Now, whether or not that is a paper ballot remains to be seen. But clearly, there are steps that can and should be taken. And the state, quite frankly, is going to have unfunded mandates are not enough, which is what you're referring to. You can come up with the great ideas and the solutions and then direct counties to finance them. In DeKalb, we probably could afford it. That's not true for small counties in rural Georgia, in ex-urban Georgia, who might be burdened by a huge, huge cost increase to administer elections.
Ed, you've argued election-related cases in mm-hmm. federal court and the state Supreme Court when it came to the lieutenant governor's yes. race and a concern about undercounted ballots on the machines. What's your take on this? If Totenberg keeps his case moving forward, how does it interfere with the state's plans to move on, go ahead and buy these machines, get a contract and buy these machines? What happened?
Well, Michael's right in that the only thing that happened in this order was to overcome the first hurdle, which
right.
is a fairly easy hurdle for the plaintiffs to overcome, which is simply just to say, look, there's some evidence out there. We think you ought to have a full hearing rather than dismiss it as a matter of law. And I certainly would expect Judge Totenberg to move expeditiously for all the reasons that we've already considered. The fact of the matter is, while there's a lot of rhetoric here, both sides are actually moving a little bit closer to agreement on when it comes to the necessity for at least a paper backup. That's mm-hmm. what the new statute requires. The question is whether or not that backup will be generated as a result of a machine doing it or as a result of the voter, him or herself, doing it directly. That's a lot closer than we were when we were arguing that it was either going to be paper ballots entirely or it was going to be an electronic system with no paper backup.
Yeah, but you know, here again, Lori, this is another time when confusion gets thrown into the mix here for voters.
And I'm just not convinced that a hand-marked system will be that much, you know, better than, you know, an electronic machine. And I think that Georgia will probably argue that, you know, a lot of these election issues we've dealt with in the current law that was just passed because they looked at the registrations and the move or the closing of the voting booths, you know, has to be done by a certain amount of time before the election. So they did address some of those issues, but I just don't see that a handwritten system is the best way to go.
I think a lot of people need to go back and read Professor Bullock's book on the three elections back in 1946 and see how safe paper ballots were with a ballot box.
Well, it was interesting. This issue originated on the extreme right in terms of questions about election integrity.
Uh-huh.
It has meandered to the middle, and now it's energy from the left.
Yeah, sure.
And that's what Ed is really alluding to. Yeah. There's a lot of consensus around we need to do more and be more accountable.
Yeah. And remember, bids for proposals for the new election system are out. The process is already underway. So any sort of court ruling could derail that new legislation that Lori mentioned that is already sort of, you know, in that process of trying to vet those machines, let the contracts and figure out who will provide them.
And some of those long lines, you know, that we talked about that are mentioned in the court filings, you know, weren't a result of the machines. They were a result of lack of machines or management or somebody forgetting the power cord, but it wasn't a direct result of machines.
And you know, an individual having to whatever you do to bubble in your choice as opposed to touching a screen, that's going to slow down the process. That's going to add to the lines. So there's a lot of things to be said for the system that's being proposed in terms of an electronic system with a paper backup.
Fulton County may not want that paper
system.
Yeah,
that's right. All right. Well, let's see when Totenberg gets everybody together and has a hearing on this. We hope it's sooner rather than later for all our sakes as voters in this state. Lori Geary, we talked at the beginning of this show about the fact that Governor Kemp was playing to his base, certainly with 481, the way he talks about the film studios. And he really took another step in that direction by apparently, based on the reporting I'm reading, in a fairly off-the-cuff, casual way, said, yeah, I'm getting rid of Common Core, which is a multi-state standard agreed to by most of the governors, I think, in the United States, and a committee of governors that put together the Common Core, chaired by former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue. Again, not exactly Mr. Liberal. It's not a curriculum. It merely says it's measurements. It says that in any state at third grade, here are the things we expect a student should be able to accomplish, you know, certain reading levels, certain essay writing levels. And now it's been something that first the Tea Party and now conservatives beyond the Tea Party have wanted to get rid of forever. And now Kemp says, I don't know if I can do it on my own, but I want to get rid of it.
I could probably talk a whole show on this because I am the parent of a fifth grader and a second grader. And I would like some of those governors to sit down and do math homework with my daughter.
See, I bet Kemp could. He's had to get his daughters through school.
And that's probably why he's pushing for this, because I would push for it, too. You know, and I think maybe Common Core is a set of standards, but, man, you open up these textbooks, and it's like Common Core textbook, Common Core workbook. And it's just, I think this plays to Democrats and Republicans, because I think, you know, Democrats and Republicans, we're all parents. And I just say amen. Like, it's time.
You're glad that he wants to eliminate Common Core.
I am so glad.
Interesting.
This, for me, was like kind of had to dust off the cobwebs, because 6 or 7 years ago, this was all we were writing about. This was one of the biggest, if not the biggest, issue in Georgia Republican politics. Every state GOP meeting, every candidate, school boards that were run by conservatives were all calling for the end of Common Core. And then it's kind of been dormant for a while. It's still out there, but it certainly hasn't been the issue that it was.
All right, so Mike Thurman, once again, we turn to you, because you were the superintendent of DeKalb County Schools. It all comes back to you, Thurman.
Man of many jobs.
Yeah. So tell us about Common Core and your experience.
This is another issue that originated with Chambers of Commerce, primarily conservative Republican leadership, wanting to improve performance and outcome in our public schools, primarily across the country. What went wrong was that President Obama endorsed it. And then it became an issue of separation of powers between the federal government and states.
It never was a federal mandate. It was a product of the work of a group of governors.
Yes.
Again, headed by Sonny Perdue.
Yes. And then it became a battle of separation of powers and how much influence what the federal government have in the court of designing curriculum for state and local school districts.
And I would just like to see the data of, is it working? You know, are the college graduates who have gone through the Common Core, are more of them in remedial math now because of this, or are they better off? I mean, I think that those are the million-dollar questions. But I also think there's a reason we are seeing Kumons and mathnasiums pop up everywhere, and it's great for business, because my daughter was in Kumon, and that's exactly what the owner said, was, you know, they don't learn as many of the basics anymore, so that's why we're here.
Yeah.
And back when this was the biggest issue, you had both Governor Deal and then school superintendent John Barge, both as supporters of these standards, while their own party, both of them were Republicans, and their own party bases were revolting against it. So they're in this position where the Governor Deal ended up ordering a review of the standards and ended up minor tweaks, but nothing major. Now you've got Governor Kemp, who's the first anti-Common Core governor in Georgia history, because both Sonny Perdue and Nathan Deal were both supporters of it, who's saying that, yeah, this might take a long time, this might take a lot of political capital, but he wants to eliminate the last vestiges of these standards.
To Greg's point, one of the things that's very interesting to me is that the base has basically overtaken business interests in Georgia. Mm. That the present leadership is more likely, if choices have to be made, whether it's to what Greg said earlier, whether it's the film industry or Common Core, they are more likely to turn and embrace the base as opposed to business leaders, Georgia Chamber of Commerce, which has been the really the Bible for Georgia politics for more than 30
really,
years.
Ask Delta about its tax break, exactly.
Delta, I mean, it's over and over, and Greg has written about it on multiple occasions. It's amazing when you really think about the evolution.
I got to get to a break. Ed, you can have the last word on this.
I think that that what Laurie was saying is dead on. Let's look at the stats and see if it's working or not.
Yeah, okay.
That's the bottom line. Is it improving the quality of education or not?
All right, let's do this. Let's get our final break of the show out of the way. We still have time when we come back to take on a couple of other issues that I hope we all think are interesting. We'll do that in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, conflicts within the NRA. And the New York State Attorney General's investigation into the NRA's tax-exempt status. We talk with New York Times reporter Danny Hakim. He's been investigating conflicts within the NRA's leadership, its lawsuit against its advertising and PR company, and what leaked documents reveal about the organization. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and gpbnews.org.
I'm Sarah Ammon. I own Out of the Blue in Blue Ridge, Georgia. We specialize in wines from around the world and high-end cheeses. And we also have craft beer. I think a lot of people that listen to GPB, it's just part of their day-to-day routine. I have people coming up from Atlanta just to see what Out of the Blue is all about, because they hear our ads all the time, and they say so.
To find out more about becoming a corporate sponsor, email sponsorship@gpb.org.
Mike Thurman, I don't want to let this show end without mentioning something that I wish I had when I introduced you, your new book.
Thank you, Bill. 40th anniversary edition, third edition, of A Story Untold, Black Men and Women in Athens History, going on sale June 8th in Athens. Shameless plug, but published by the Athens Historical Society.
Your people, some people do not know, although we've mentioned it on this show, that you're a historian at heart, and you have another book that is in the works that will be published in the not-too-distant future, right?
Very excited. A biography of James Edward Oglethorpe.
Yeah, that's really going to be...
Founding father, right. State of Georgia, and the first abolitionist.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, really going to be interesting. We'll do a show with you about your work as a historian at some point in the not-too-distant future. Okay, Keisha Bottoms, the mayor of Atlanta, was on... Georgia Public Broadcasting's radio, on the radio station yesterday, on our website, podcast, lots of different platforms. She's going to be doing a monthly Ask the Mayor segment, it turns out, with Ricky Bevington, our host of All Things Considered. And among many questions that Ricky and listeners got to ask her, Ricky wanted to know why Mayor Bottoms has decided she wants to see the missing and murdered case reopened, reinvestigated. And I thought her answer was interesting. Let's listen.
The best answer that I have is that it is something that really is beyond my understanding. I don't know why it's so heavy on my heart or why it has been. But when I heard Mrs. Catherine Leach speak about her son Curtis and praying that she could get some answers, and what I know is that sometimes when we pray about things, we don't know who will be the one to answer our prayers or in what form, but it has resonated with me in a way that has many times been very surprising to me. It is something that I lived through as a child in Atlanta, and watching Mrs. Leach and really experiencing these stories again as an adult is something that I just haven't been able to put to rest.
Curtis Leach was one of the people killed in the missing and murdered case, and his mother, made obviously a huge impact on Mayor Bottoms when she came to see Mayor Bottoms. But here's my question. A very emotional answer, Greg, and in some ways I sort of give her credit for being willing to be so honest and candid about the fact that she's not quite sure why, but this moves her deeply emotionally. Still, is this opening a can of worms?
It could be, but look, she grew up in Atlanta at a time when these horrific crimes were taking place, and now she's in a position to do something about it. She's one of the first city leaders of that generation who were personally affected by this, and the news coverage of it, and the sort of envelope of fear all around the city. And now she can do something. She as an executive of the city. Yeah.
Keep in mind that what was Wayne Williams actually convicted
of?
Two out of
a dozen.
It was a child murder. So mm-hmm. None of those families got justice.
And so right. You know, they didn't get justice.
Right.
And certainly, you know, given how far we've come with DNA evidence and everything else in terms of forensic examination, you know, given the folks who are still living with a mystery as to what happened to their child, I think it's perfectly appropriate. Kudos to her.
I didn't get here until after it was over. I came in the fall of 83, but in our newsroom, I was at WSB-TV, and people were still buzzing, Lori Geary, about having been part of that. Reporters like a Richard Belcher, who was
right
back in those days at Channel 5, a Mark Picard, and others still buzzing about what it was like, because Wayne Williams was a freelance cameraman mm-hmm. who would work with reporters. So it made it even more chilling for the journalists who had worked with him.
And I think, you know, I mean, I wasn't here. I grew up in Pittsburgh.
Right.
I was young, really young at the time as well. But I think, you know, there's just such a human fascination with these cases. You know, you see like the Ted Bundy documentaries. And then, you know, there was a recent documentary done, or podcast was, I can't remember, on the Wayne Williams case. And so I think the fact that these families never got justice, and the fact that the mayor was so personally affected by it, and he talked to a lot of African Americans growing up in that time, and their parents, oh, my mom would never let me out. You know, I was never allowed out after dark, or I was never allowed out even during the day because there was such a fear. And I think it brings back so many memories.
Mike?
The case lacked closure.
Yeah.
It's something I hadn't thought about for years, to be quite honest with you. And if you really think about the controversy and the discussion around the murders as to who the perpetrator was or might be, and if it turned out to be this black guy, Wayne Williams, and think of, we are a city of monuments and celebrations. They are few, if any, monuments to those young men who lost their lives.
Yeah.
And it was as if a city or a state sought to move on without full resolution.
So you were a young African-American kid growing up in Athens, of course, at the time. Do you remember that this had an impact on you from as far away as Athens?
Oh, absolutely.
Did it?
Because you didn't know who the murderer was. Mm-hmm. And initially, that was taught that it was the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. You have to really think about it. This is Atlanta, it's Georgia, always a racial context to who was committing these murders. But what I had forgotten, Bill, to be quite honest with you, and I think the mayor's right on point, there was no closure. It just stopped.
Yeah.
It just stopped.
Well, thank you all for talking about it. And we're really thrilled that the mayor's decided she wants to, do this monthly program with Ricky Bevington. We'll tell you, I'm choking a little. We'll tell you more about it as when the next show comes along. Finally, I almost hate to bring this up. It looks like as the Congress gets set to go off for the Memorial Day holiday, they're going to make a deal. Puerto Rico, Georgia, other states that need emergency funds.
Possibly.
Maybe. Bluestein's already raising his eyebrows.
Yes.
Is this going to happen or not, for goodness sake? We're already hearing that President Trump isn't happy with the settlement that the Congress, the Republicans and Democrats have worked
and
out.
And if you tuned into today's standoff where you heard Trump and Nancy Pelosi have a very quick abbreviated meeting where he left saying basically, if Democrats still investigate me, we can't get any work done, then you might as well say forget the Hurricane Michael relief, at least for the short term.
You know, Ed, we have a lot of listeners who are in rural Georgia for this show, and our hearts go out to them that they're caught in the middle
of
this.
Your hearts rightly should go out to anyone who's the victim of a natural disaster, whether or not they're in Georgia or in Puerto Rico or in California or in Texas or anywhere else. And there's a lot of folks that are suffering. And there's one thing that government should do, and it's across the political spectrum, is take care of the least among us during a disaster. And this needs to be done. Neither side looks good, and neither side should look good until this bill is passed.
I think that's such a great point. Nobody's got the high ground here, Lori Geary.
No, that's what I was going to say. Both sides look bad. And there's no give and take. I mean, I feel like we're closer than we've ever been because we're close on the Puerto Rico and we have the other numbers worked out. But still, we are how far away from the holiday and still no deal.
I grew up on a farm. My daddy farmed. I grew up raising plants and caring for animals. And one thing about farms and farm families is the margins are so small.
Yeah.
We can possibly get by. And for our government, Republicans and Democrats, to fail these families is unacceptable. And I think a low point in American politics.
All right. Well, we'll see. Greg Bluestein, you're quite right. If people have not seen it in any form, whether reading about it or watching cable news, the problems between President and the Democrats in Congress grew exponentially this morning, and it's beginning to feel like nothing is going to get accomplished up there. So we'll watch how that unfolds. We are completely out of time for today's Political Rewind. Thank you all for a really fascinating conversation. I appreciate your all being here. For all of you out there listening, oh, by the way, remember, Monday night, June 3rd, I'll say it again, we'll be in Cartersville, Georgia, where we're going to be holding a town meeting in which we want to hear what all of you who come out have to say about the big issues that we talk about all the time on this show. Go to the Political Rewind page at politicalrewind.org and click on the link, sign up for your free ticket, and we'll see you in Cartersville Monday night, June 3rd. Until Friday at 2, I'm Bill Nigut. Take care.